And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is just turning 3 minutes past nine on this Tuesday. It is the 27th of August, 2024. How are you all getting on? I hope you're very well. On this morning, did it rain much last night? There was this yellow rain warning, but I didn't hear anything. I slept sound, so I woke up dry. Did it happen? I don't know. If it did, anyway, I hope it didn't affect you too bad. The lines are open for you right now, 07491 25000. That is to take the calls. That is to make a call. Caroline Orr, our producer researcher, is taking the calls, assisted ably by Shannon. And you can also WhatsApp and text us on 086 60 25000. Feel free to send a voice note, a note, a question on the social medias about how you contact people. Do you ever have one of those friends that you text and they call you back straight away and you were like, you don't mind, you take the call to your mate, but you're like, well, kind of thought this was going to be a text thing. Don't want to really talk, but anyway. You can check that out on our socials along with everything else. You can email us as well, comments@highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the show, get on over to YouTube. If maybe the young ones are back at school and you've got some time at home to yourself, why not watch your local radio show on YouTube, on your smart TV or your Fire Stick? Just type in Highland Radio Ireland. You will see we are live and we're on Facebook and on Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries, Highland Hub, and on the X platform, Highland Radio. Right, let's go to the newspapers for this morning to see if it sparks any interest amongst us. The Irish Times this morning. Some adult asylum seekers may be claiming to be minors when arriving in the Republic, adding to severe demands on already understrained system for unaccompanied child asylum seekers. Internal department briefings have warned. Now you can see why this could be problematic. Over the last 2 years, there has been a significant increase in the number of underage asylum seekers arriving into the state without guardianship. Internal reports show the Department of Children flagged concerns that in some cases adults were claiming to be under 18 years of age in initial interviews with staff from the International Protection Office. Now, this is complicated because how do you prove otherwise if there is no documentation? Briefing notes from department officials state that these asylum seekers were later assessed to be adults or report afterwards that they are adults. This was adding to the already severe demands on the system, the briefing said. On to the Irish Independent now. And I'm not going to lie to you, there's not a great deal in the newspapers this morning. I actually was kind of naive. I thought that if you went on the likes of the Late Late Show or other RTE programs, you know, normally they're plugging something like it's a film or a podcast or a book or a stage show. And I kind of thought it was a contra deal, right? So they get the exposure on the big shows, so to speak, and, you know, they turn up for free. Not at all. RTE actually paid out more than €340,000 in guest fees over the past 12 months. As I say, maybe I'm naive. I just thought they're getting something. The TV shows are getting something, and so be it. Well, RTE's paid out over €340,000 in guest fees over the past 12 months, with the Late Late Show accounting for nearly 40% of that spending. But I suppose it's staying within the organisation, considering that most of the guests are from the canteen. The payments were made to contributors across a wide range of public service broadcasters, most popular TV and radio shows, but not to politicians or those promoting film, albums, programmes or a book. OK, well, that answers my question. The highest spend was by Patrick Kilty's Late Late Show, which has run up €135,000 in guest fees since the comedian took over the hot seat from Ryan Tuberty. That money was shared between 170 different guests on the Friday night talk show, an average payment of about €800 per person. The next highest bill was for RTE Radio Today with Claire Byrne, where guest fees totaled just over 60,000, according to figures released under the Freedom of Information Act. And again, you know, it really is quite remarkable because they have that budget. I suppose they can attract the guests. I can tell you right now, there's certainly no local radio station that would have a budget to be able to do that type of stuff. But anyway, there you go. If you're listening to us over in Britain, or you're flying to Britain and back, or from Britain to here and back around about Christmas, Aer Lingus has joined Ryanair in warning of a huge increase in the cost of flying. The cost of Christmas flights to the UK could spiral after Aer Lingus slashed its journeys across the Irish Sea amid ongoing pressure from the passenger cap at Dublin Airport. Ryanair boss Michael O'Leary recently warned that flights to London this Christmas could cost as much as €500 each way as a result of what he called the artificial €32 million passenger cap at the airport. Now, it is a strange cap, I suppose, in that they built a second runway for what? I presumed it was to be used. They're not using it, so it was a bit of a waste of money. But in more bad news for travellers, Aer Lingus yesterday announced it will reduce its Dublin-London Heathrow service by around two flights a day this winter following the 17.75% pay hike agreed with pilots and a failure to return to pre-pandemic business. It said the controversial €32 million traffic limit at Dublin was a factor in its decision. So it's kind of strange, isn't it? And it is also kind of interesting, is the main spokesperson on that issue seems to be Eamon Ryan, who's actually the Minister for, he's the Minister for Transport, isn't he? And you would imagine that's what his job is, to sort of maintain transport or enhance it where need be. And there's a lot of talk about pollution and what have you, and the various industries that impact on it. But air travel accounts for something like 3 or 4% of all pollution. It is actually somewhat smaller than you might imagine. The Sun this morning, another former celebrity or someone well known is seeking to run for a political party, this time broadcaster Alison Cumming. She's become the latest star addition to Fianna Fáil's new general election ticket. The 54-year-old former Sky News presenter will run for the party in the Louth constituency. She's the latest celebrity addition to Fianna Fáil's roster, with Virgin Media host Grainne Scheuga looking to become a candidate in Galway. Cumming, who's worked on UTV Ireland, BBC and Sky during a decades-long media career, announced this the shock move yesterday. The Drogheda native told how she's deeply rooted in her community and ready to bring about a positive new dawn for Drogheda and for Louth. Okay, there you go. Fine Gael selected their candidates for Donegal last night. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out for them. We'll probably talk about that a little later on. It seems from some of the commentary that really it's a plan to get one elected rather than get two elected. But anyway, on to the Irish Daily Mirror. The government has published a strategy to implement clear and simple actions to help improve the lives of people with autism over the next 18 months. It comes as Taoiseach Simon Harris yesterday met teenage advocate Cara Darmody as part of her campaign for better autism services. The Autism Innovation Strategy has 83 actions under four key pillars: autism-affirming society, equality of access to public services, accessible and inclusive communities, and building capacity. Mr. Harris said he is determined to make a difference in the lives of people with autism. And unfortunately, that's one of those ones we're going to have to wait and see. I think there's a lot of people maybe that got a commitment about scoliosis operations that would be looking on and saying, well, that didn't happen. And finally, in the Star this morning, two rent-a-kill vans were seen entering the gates of Dáil-Éireann yesterday, sparking fears of further pest control issues. The buildings have been subject to numerous pest control issues over the years, including last year when the pest control company was alerted to rodent activity in the Dáil canteen at Kildare House on January 18th. Last November, pest controllers were also called to investigate a bad smell coming from underneath the Dáil chamber in Leinster House, while also dealing with infestations of rats, mice, moths, slugs and ants in the seat of the National Parliament. The foul odour was reported last November and was traced to, where? Cellars underneath the old chambers. So there you go. They'll get it all nice and tidy now for when everyone goes back to work. Some of your comments that came in late on the show yesterday, a few on the housing situation. Greg, I was renting a house for 11 years and never had a day's bother with the landlord. Then he rang me one day to say he wanted me to move out as his son wanted the house for a holiday home. Luckily, I did find another house to rent, and since I moved out, within a month, Ukrainians were moved in. So the landlords are definitely benefiting more from the government. Okay. Hi Greg, I'm a landlord with one three-bedroomed house in a popular town. So this is coming from a landlord, and I really do appreciate it, because the one thing that I'm very keen to do is give different perspectives on some of the stuff we talk about. So this is useful. I charge €600 a month. I'm sick and tired of all landlords being tarred with the one brush. I'm taxed out of it by the government on a yearly basis. I have to be registered and pay an annual fee to the tenancy board. I'm making no fortune out of it, and there is no incentive for me to continue private renting. I did rent to HAP tenants and had no difficulty doing so, but Donegal County Council put me off ever doing this again with all the paperwork, inspections, highlighting the most tiny insignificant problems. I'm seriously considering putting my property on Airbnb, as there's definitely more money to be made by doing this than in the private rental market. Okay, so that's the view from a landlord. €800 per month tax-free for Ukrainians as against taxable rental income for Irish people looking for rental homes. Can't blame landlords looking for Ukrainians rather than Irish tenants. Also less red tape as against HAP applicants. Actually, that's quite interesting when you look at the figures like that. Of course, I was aware of, but I didn't think of, as I asked that question yesterday, of that initiative there. And you're right about the less red tape and tax and what have you. So it's a fair point. Right, okay. We're joined on the programme by Christy Galligan. Hi, Christy. How are you getting on today?
Good morning, Greg. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fantastic. Now, you sent a correspondence as it relates to some parking issues or parking concerns. I'll let you outline it rather than me trying to paraphrase it.
Yeah, we, as you know, like every commuter around Letterkenny at the present moment, I'm sure they're very frustrated with the position in relation to traffic in our loops out on by the post or roundabout or on Pearson Road. But on top of that, they've decided now to reduce the parking spaces up here by on the back road here in Letterkenny, which is close to the number of schools here. And what they have done is, rather than increase parking spaces for cars, for parents and the buses that arrive here in the morning, they've reduced it. They've actually widened the footpath outside the schools up here. And what they've done is, by reducing the amount of footpath space here, they have actually will increase the problems with traffic snarl-offs in the morning and parents leaving children off at the schools. And I don't understand the thought process behind it, and I don't think anybody else understands the thought process behind anything that's going on traffic management here in Letterkenny. And I'm wondering, was it the TIA or the local council who've made this decision to reduce the parking spaces for parents and school buses here in the morning? I have no comprehension or understanding behind it at all, and what was the reason behind it? Now, this might be to increase the amount of footpath space for cyclists and pedestrians, but there are very few cyclists that come up the back road up that steep hill going towards St. Union's College. Let me assure you, I've tried it a few times myself. Let me assure you, I got halfway up the hill and I had to dismount, as they say. And, you know, I don't understand the reason behind it. I mean, instead of increasing the parking space and reducing the problems that we have in relation to traffic flows around Letterkenny, they have now added to it by doing this. And every day we've seen traffic increasing on the Pearce Road, going right out over Old Town or out towards Glenswilly. Then we have the usual problems either from Carnamugga upper towards the town, because the simple thing was that they put in traffic lights where there wasn't a need for traffic lights. And these things have added to the problems with commuters and frustration. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners, Greg, at the present moment in time will probably agree with me on most of this, if not all of it. And I think there's something going on that we don't understand, and I don't know what it is that they have that are trying to do to improve it, but they're not improving it. Actually, we're going backwards instead of going forwards.
Is the idea not, and they're being quite obvious, quite honest about it in Dublin, is it not really, as you've already sort of indicated, is to encourage different forms of travel, the use of buses, you know, drop off and walk, or cycle where you don't necessarily have to cycle up Mount Everest, if you know what I mean, and also maybe to discourage you know, traffic that's not there for school business. Maybe that simply is it. It's designed to encourage people or frustrate people to different ways of travelling.
Yeah, that's all very well if you have the proper infrastructure in place, and we don't have in the Letterkenny area, and it's something that has brought up to my attention recently. We don't have it in the Letterkenny area where we have proper bus routes. We don't have the Lewis routes like they have in Dublin. They don't have the local links, that the bus links that we need there. You know, I mean, that is the problem that we have here. If we had proper bus links in Letterkenny, maybe then we could see ourselves reducing the traffic flows, and that would be most agreeable.
But you know, there are significant plans, and the plans are advancing for you know, a pretty full Letterkenny bus service. It's in the it's in the public consultation realm at the moment, and they do seem, you know, they do seem really quite committed to it. It's TII that's behind that nonsense.
I've seen that. Yeah. It's like the commitment they made, Greg, in relation to the A5. We've invested a lot of money in the extra, in the initial planning stages, and the amount of money goes into planning and engineering. And how many years do we have to wait for these things come to the fore? But we seem to be going everything, and I hate to use the word arse about face here, where we're creating problems that don't need to have problems. We always seem to build around the infrastructure rather than the infrastructure itself. The infrastructure comes after we build something or we expand, let's say, in housing estates and stuff like that there, where there are needs for proper infrastructure. I see it in Spain and places like that, where they put the infrastructure in first and then they build around it, you know, to ensure that everything is in place first and access is there first. But we seem to do the reverse. We seem to build before we put in the infrastructure, and then we decide afterwards, oh, sure, we've just, say, resurfaced the road, let's dig it up, and let's put something else in place.
But I mean, if you were a planner and starting from scratch, the last place you'd build Letterkenny, though, is where it is. Is part of the problem in that we have to sort of adapt around, you know, where population growth has actually happened. You know, Letterkenny's kind of like on the side of a hill. It's an old town with narrow roads. You know what I mean? Like, and obviously then people want the schools close to it, so where do you build it? You build it as close as you can. And it creates all these problems. You know, you see it in Ballyshannon as well, you know, built on the side of a hill. No one would do that in reality nowadays. Yeah, you've seen how they built Milton Keynes there. That's really the only recent city I can think of that was started from scratch in the 70s. And I spoke to someone who helped design it, and it was built like the American roads, you know, crossways. So is this not just part of dealing with history, Christy?
Yeah, and I mean, if you go to Cork, that was built literally down on a swamp, but up on a hill as well, if you go in parts of Cork City. But they managed to build it and create a fantastic city, you know, and I've seen it, been down there a number of times, and it's very accessible, and they have done great work with it. But they've made it usable both for pedestrians, cyclists, and the commuter. But they've increased, all right, they have the bus services, they're increasing extra rail links. I mean, I wrote an article in relation to the All Ireland strategy. I mean, it's a bit of a joke, the All Ireland strategy, railway strategy, because Donegal, apart from one little red dot from Letterkenny to Derry, where they're proposing to put a rail link, I mean, the rail link should go from Letterkenny down to Sligo to link it and along the Western Corridor. We're kind of forgotten in lots of ways when it comes to major infrastructure
changes. And to be honest with you, I kind of disregarded that whole plan when I realised there was no money allocated for it. So it was just a nice little document. Now, I was going to ask you, you know, there were issues there before, and, you know, we do have to get the balance right about a shared space, you know, be it pedestrians, cyclists, scooters, or cars. But there's no point in me asking you, because you're not a roads engineer. That's why we pay these people the big money, isn't it? Because they are supposed to come up with solutions to these issues. But you recognise there was a problem there to begin with.
There was a problem there to begin with in relation to that, and then they made it a partial one-way system. I don't know whether they're going to make it a whole one-way system, but there was a partial one-way system created just above the school going towards St. Union's College, which was a great plus. But then people started as heretofore parking on the footpaths, et cetera, et cetera. But how do you reduce the traffic flow that stops in the morning or the afternoon or in the evening? How do you reduce that? How do you accommodate parents who are leaving off their kids who are driving into school? I mean, they're not all going to get on a bus. That's the unfortunate part.
No, we but that being said, you know, and I know myself from pretty much, you know, mainly the Abbey Vocational School in Donegal Town, which itself has its causes traffic problems. Every student who's not on a bus is in one, you know, it's one student per car. I mean, is that really the way we want to be going forward? And I'm amongst them, by the way. Yeah, I'm not being critical of them, but, you know, you've got about 600 cars and one student in each car. It probably isn't an effective use of transport.
Yeah, the sad reality is if we had proper transport in place, proper bus links in place, in Letterkenny that accommodated those students going to the schools, maybe we'd see less cars and less parents coming to school and dropping off their kids. I see it there, and I see it constantly, and they're blocking roads, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe we need to get advise parents, look, it's hold on a second, if your child is only, you know, half a mile away from school, what is preventing that child from walking to school or walking with others to school?
I think that's what they're trying to do, Christy. They're trying to sort of say, right, it's not worth you getting in the car, make them walk or cycle.
But you know as well as I do, there'll be a hell of a lot of resistance from parents having your children walk any amount of yardage to school. Yeah. You know, and that's the problem, is getting through to parents and educating parents as well. But it's another thing just added on. And as I said, it's like the traffic lights are put on the post or roundabout or one over at McGinley at the junction between Justice Walsh Road and Pierce Road. There's an ongoing problem daily with traffic back and built up there that's causing inherent amount of problems.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember putting in a document many years ago just to show a better way of free flow traffic, as did colleagues of mine before that. But we always seem to be behind the curve when we're trying to improve things, rather than doing the improvements in situ before we start to expand, and then the bus links here in Letterkenny, as I've been told time after time, we need to improve a better bus link service in Letterkenny. Then we might see a reduction in the traffic flows that come into the town.
Yeah, but people will say there are buses that provide services in Letterkenny and they go past with a passenger on them. You know, we're slow adapters
I was told by one gentleman, one businessman here in Letterkenny, but some of the routes are not picking up where the vast majority of the people would travel from. So maybe they could look at that as well.
All right. Like, I get where you're coming from, Christian, and I hear that. Mm. But, say, for instance, even when the Polestar went in, the lights went in and other light systems, like, I don't hear the business community crying. You know what I mean? Not crying. That sounds like it. You know what I'm on about. Complaining or having issues. Like, I would have thought if the traffic's that bad, if people are avoiding going to Letterkenny, if it's impacting on business, those are the voices that you'd expect to hear. But I don't hear those voices. And it makes me wonder sometimes if the problems are as bad as maybe some people as individuals feel. Because you'd imagine that the businesses as a collective might go, you know, we really need to do something here because people are avoiding Letterkenny. People can't get around the place. There's no one coming in through the doors. But I don't hear that, Christy. I don't hear it.
Maybe people are just so fed up at the present moment they don't even bother, you know, ringing yourself or someone else to voice their concerns. I know I've written to the council on numerous occasions about resurfacing roads up where I am and taking photographs of the roads themselves, how they've been badly neglected and one thing and another. And it takes numerous emails and photographs before anything is done. And what is done then is slightly haphazard. You know, that's the issues that we have. The simple things, if they could do the simple things well, maybe we could move forward. Mm. But there's just the small things that if we tweak them here and there without making huge changes, that causes angst amongst commuters and businesses. Like, because I know from the Polestar out towards the roundabout on the Derry side, that's, you know, we were talking about the ambulances or large lorries trying to manage passing each other on the road out there, that if there's a serious incident, we could have a major, major problem down the road. And that hasn't really been thought out either. So I think I mean, I'm not an engineer and I would never purport to be an engineer, but I just see what I see from my...
Yep, that's it. Christy, the point's well made. Listen, thanks very much indeed.
Right.
It's all observation-based. Take care of yourself. Christy Gallagher there. And some of it doesn't make sense. Like, I remember the first interview we did as it relates to the traffic changes in Donegal Town. And I wasn't aware of them. It kind of got me sort of without knowledge, if you know what I mean, in advance. And I was doing the interview, and they were talking about this one-way system and doing this, that, and the other. And I couldn't figure out, what problem are we fixing here? You know, where is the demand? Who's calling for this? Why are we doing this? And as it turns out, I think Donegal Town's a basket case now, and I'm seeing traffic jams and queues where they were never queues before. But someone thought it was the right thing to do. But as I say, I went into it without any knowledge at all. I was like, well, why in God's name are we doing that? It doesn't make any sense. But anyway, maybe it'll settle down and maybe most people think it's a good idea.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
See D-Ream, Top Loader, Chris Norman, the original voice of Smokey and many more at Oakfest in Oakville Park on the 7th and 8th of September. Oakfest, sponsors of the 9 till noon show. See oakvillepark.com.
And one for the road.
Get ready to celebrate Paul's Venue's 35th birthday bash this Saturday, 31st of August. Don't miss One for the Road with support from DJ Tubbsy. Doors open at 11. Join the biggest party in Letterkenny this Saturday night at Paul's Venue.
Join Home Instead and make a difference in older people's lives. Home Instead Hiring Week is Monday the 2nd to Friday the 6th of September. For event details or to apply now, visit homeinstead.ie.
Home Instead. To us, it's personal.
Did you know Cool Kids Sligo have the biggest range of baby equipment in the Northwest with 25 years of baby expertise? Cool Kids Sligo take deposits on your baby bundle. Visit us in-store at Cool Kids Sligo or shop online at babyaccessories.ie for free nationwide delivery. Make Cool Kids Sligo your number one destination for all things baby.
Hello, Jedward speaking. Sorry, Edward speaking.
Hey bro, I'm glad you picked up.
Who is this?
It's me, John. I'm literally outside in the landing.
I don't know any Sean. Lose my number. Hello?
Edward, don't hang up. I'm sorry for saying a handyman could fix the gas boiler. Please forgive...
Always use a registered gas installer, or you could risk everything. Find one at rgi.ie.
Irwin Electrical require a full-time sales assistant in their Buncrana store with immediate start available. No experience is necessary, as full training will be provided. Please send your CV to info@irwinexpert.ie. Closing date for applications is Friday, the 30th of August, 2024.
Just a follow-up email on that last conversation we had. Is there any chance that someone from the council could answer a question? Skull Column Kill in Loretto Convent on the Convent Road will be disrupted next week as they all stop back at school. The council is still working outside the school, putting in a cycle lane. They've narrowed the road that much that two lorries passing on it will have bother. They've took away all parking outside the school. How are parents going to park to lift the children, especially in Skull Column Kill? It was pandemonium before with traffic jams. We have road paths nearly wider than the road and no one will be cycling on the cycle lane as no one in the council thought about the parking situation outside these schools at all. Really frustrating. Next week on Highland Radio, a lot of people will be angry, road users that is, in Letterkenny again. Keep your views coming in on that. Right, so as we mentioned, the government has published a autism innovation strategy, and it's been welcomed by the likes of As I Am, who believe it marks an important milestone as part of a campaign for an equitable society for autistic people and families in Ireland. We're joined on the programme now to get some local reaction to it by John Joe McGinley, founder of AutismDad.ie. And I suppose on the face of it, anytime you hear the word autism coming out of politicians' mouths, that's a positive thing because they're talking about it, right? But what do you think? What's your initial reactions to this publication, John Joe?
Well, firstly, good morning, Greg, and all your listeners, and thank you for having me on. As you said, anything that raises autism awareness and autism education has to be welcomed. But this is all just words. And the problem is, unless words are actually backed up by hard cash, by people on the ground, and by a real commitment to break apart the failing system that we have in Ireland for autism and support, then it just remains words. The telling factor for me was that when the Taoiseach was asked, well, how much money has been allocated to actually support this, his words were, well, wait and see. And we're waiting and seeing for a budget. And as everybody knows, once there's a budget, this government's going to cut and run and there's going to be an election. So these fine words might mean nothing when a new government comes into place. But again, I have to be honest and say that anything that does raise autism awareness has to be welcomed. But sadly, without the cold hard cash and the people on the ground, it just remains words.
Yeah, the Autism Innovation Strategy is 83 actions under four key pillars, namely autism-affirming society, equality of access to public services, accessible and inclusive communities, and building capacity. So what in that would be introduced that would improve things, if that makes sense? I mean, what is that saying to us?
What it's saying is a tacit admission that the existing system has failed. And the thing that's missing from that, because I always look at what's the key thing that needs to come out of this, because 83 measures, that just overloads people's brains. The key thing for me that should be there is, where is the coordinated one plan for a child from birth, from assessment, that takes them through their entire life, that allows them to access the rights that they should be getting as citizens of this republic, and also allows them to maximise their educational ambitions, also to maximise the skills that they have and put them into a pathway to employment. Because the schools are fantastic, but the biggest thing that worries a lot of parents that I deal with when it comes to autism and additional needs is when the cliff edge happens, when you leave school, then our children fall off the radar. They go into this mass of adult support, which is, if you think that the resources are limited for children with autism, can you imagine the resources for adults with children? So the key thing has to be, I don't care how many points it is, create a pathway where all the agencies of the state, the HSE, the CDNT, CAMHS, the social welfare, all work together in the education system to allow our children to have, firstly, one, an assessment that gets them the support they're entitled to, and secondly, a plan that all the professionals that are required can actually contribute to and provide a pathway to maximise the skill and the opportunities for our children. That's the key thing that's missing.
Yeah, you see, there are words and there are actions. Simon Harris said, we are determined to make a difference and we're determined to make sure that your voices are heard. We're determined to work day and night to challenge the system in many ways to ensure you get the services you need. Mr. Harris described it as a really ambitious plan. That's words. Actions would be the HSE fully committing to abide by the Disability Act 2005. That would set a legal obligation to have a child's special needs assessed within 6 months. So the words are the words, but the actions are the actions. And in fairness to Cara Darmody, that was one of her key demands, that the HSE simply abide by and commit to the Disabilities Act 2005. That's what I would see as actions. I'll wait to see what comes from the words. I'm disappointed at the lack of the actions.
But the other actions have to be, if we take the services that are already there, right, the first thing that has to be looked at is the Child Disability Network team, right? They are completely understaffed. It's a air code lottery in Ireland. There are certain supports that you can get in Dublin that you can't get in Donegal. There are certain supports you can get in one part of Donegal that you can't get in the other part of Donegal. They have to back up these words by getting the professionals on the ground to aid the parents. What we've got at the moment is a system where, because of the lack of resources, it's a contracted out service where it's all about webinars, where parents are given talks on how to help their children. And that's all well and good, and it's from good professionals, but we are not highly trained professionals. We're not speech and language therapists. We're not occupational therapists. We're not dietitians that can help our children when it comes to food avoidance systems. We have to get these people on board there. And then the one of the biggest issues that needs to be addressed, and I haven't seen it in the plan, is the mental health system for our children. Children with autism are more likely to be suffering from anxiety and social anxiety, and that puts them into the pathway for CAMHS. And if you look at the structure of CAMHS at the moment, once again, it's falling apart. Trying to get an appointment with CAMHS, it's nearly impossible.
But you see, the problem is when we get down to the nitty-gritty of it, and what you actually need is people to improve services. We've already seen it with CAMHS and with other services here in Donegal, and they're replicated across the country. The government might actually make the money available. Let's give them the credit for that. But they'll say, well, we can't hire the people. There's no one here. You know, the spaces are open. We see in the physical health service, if I could put it like that, you know, the money is there, the positions are there, we're told, but the staff can't be recruited. And it's the same in a lot of areas that deal with the mental health area or working with people with additional needs. So
that's a valid point. But remember that this isn't just a recent event. This is something that's been happening, not for 5 years, but for even for 10 years. The government, and it's really the same people that have been taking forward this vision, have been talking about this for a long time. They've been talking about the money, but there's also the issues about ensuring that you make the Ireland attractive enough for people to actually stay here. We're training a lot of speech and language therapists. We're training a lot of occupational therapists, but they're going off to help children in Australia and in other areas. And you can't blame people for that. It's part of the bigger picture. Mm. We can't take this in isolation. Government policy has to look at all aspects to ensure that we can get the professionals that can support our children educated here and staying here in Ireland. And that's just the bigger picture of the failing system.
And that even feeds into one of the most critical issues is housing and the affordability of housing and rent. Interesting statement from As I Am. I'm not trying to pitch you against As I Am, but obviously they seem to be one of the leading voices of the leading autism charities, but their statement does read like almost like a government press release. Is it that they have more sort of optimism in what the government might deliver than you might?
Perhaps people have been talking to each other and getting a coordinated message out there. But As I Am is a wonderful organisation. They do a lot of fantastic things. And don't get me wrong, Greg. I welcome at least this discussion. Because we can get it on the table. Parents can now call out and say, listen, if you've got this commitment, here's what we need. Back it up with hard cash and people on the ground. But I know I might sound like a broken record, but words are fine.
Yeah.
But when you're a parent on the ground looking after a child with additional needs, when you can't get a speech and language therapist, when you can't even get your child assessed, if you've got your child on a waiting list for months and months and months, and you try your best to try and give them the support you can, but you don't have the skill set to do it yourself, and you need that professional support. Words are fine, but we need that action.
Well,
we need
action. They've given themselves 18 months, it seems. 18 months has been provided for its implementation, so you and I are fair people. The commitment is there. Let's see how it's delivered. We'll talk again in 18 months, and I'm sure we'll talk in between that, John Joe. And, you know, if there's positive impact, we'll applaud it and celebrate it. And if not, we'll call it out. And that's what we do. And that's what's important. And that's what advocacy and that's what journalism is. So we'll reconvene. As I say, I'll speak to you before then. Don't get me wrong. But let's see what happens over the 18 months.
Oh, no, I wish them all the best with this. And I hope to see that the first thing we'll see from this is when they do the budget. If they put money towards this to back up their words, then we've got signs of optimism.
Yeah.
If we see in the budget that it's the same old, then it's just words.
Yeah, okay, we shall wait and see. All right, John Joe, thanks very much indeed. That is John Joe McGinley there, who is the founder of, he's Autism Dad, obviously, as what he goes by. Right, okay, 086 60 25,000 is the number. AutismDad.ie, by the way, I just wanted to give that full URL there. A caller says, Christy Galligan is so right about that area. I can't understand why they took spaces away instead of creating spaces. Some more comments here. Our students and other Donegal residents cannot get accommodation yet. Councillors are housing people that they're making money off of and not looking after the local community. So they cannot be coming on giving out about the lack of accommodation for students as if they don't know what the issue is. Hi, Greg. Why is there favouritism for Ukrainians over Irish people in the back-to-work scheme? Someone mentioned that. I'm not sure. That's something that's come up a couple of times. Was it Deputy Mark McSharry was talking about that? Hi, I'm a musician and I've been on the late a few times, and what they pay is rubbish. A few hundred euro in expenses, which probably, it was 800 euro was the average, 800 euro per performance was the average, not performance, per appearance. So maybe... maybe it is not always as it seems when you add up all the money. A caller says, a lot of people have been hacked on Facebook. They looked for my number and my friend passed it along without thinking. A scam then goes on to say that you're selling Coldplay tickets. A friend got scammed out of 600. Do not give out your number to anyone. Can you send me your number, please? You get those messages. I don't know how it progresses from there. Maybe that's how they access your account. I obviously disregarded, but they say, can you send my number, please? And the first couple of times I was like, oh, is this someone in need or someone in bother? But then they say there's follow-up messages. But anyway, that's another one of the hacks that people get into people's Facebook page and lock them out of it. And that Coldplay scam has been going around a long time now, and it looks quite convincing. Just be careful of it, especially as the concert date gets closer and people perhaps get more desperate. Has anyone noticed a big change in traffic in Letterkenny? It took me 40 minutes yesterday to go from the Remulton Road to the town. All the schools aren't even back yet, as this was at 4:20. What will happen when schools are back? I don't be in and around Letterkenny very often, but I know people that work there, and they have been talking about traffic being terrible during the summer at times, and obviously schools aren't back. They're going back now, trickling back. A lot of conversation yesterday about the pedestrian crossings in Ballybuffet, Stranorlar. A caller says they've no problem with the crossings, it's just that they are in the wrong place. Would local consultation not make sense? First, typical horse before the cart. That's what I would have thought. If someone walks out in front of you at this crossing in Ballybuffet and they're knocked down, who's responsible? The driver or the pedestrian? There are no cameras to show what happened. Councillor Patrick McGowan seemed to be quite insistent that it would be the driver. Why don't they copy the crossings that are on Main Street, Strabane? Because they wanted to experiment with Ballybuffet, Stranorlar. We were the only county, the only towns in Ireland that got these types of crossings without the lights and without any of the bells and whistles. The bypass needed ASAP, says a caller simply. Another cart before the horse. That's an awful lot of people saying that about the situation there. The banner headline in the Irish Independent. Well, their way of doing it now, it's sort of a teaser for what's inside. Millions of euro owed by private health insurers to hospitals for the treatment of insured patients is being written off, with the taxpayer picking up the bill. Last year, 3.5 million euro due in payments from health insurers to cash-strapped public hospitals had to be written off. Currently, 51 million euro worth of claims remain outstanding and need to be signed off on. Delays in hospital submitting invoices are being blamed for the write-off. So it's the article seems to suggest it's not the insurance companies that are being tight with their money, it's the foot dragging by hospitals. Let's see if we can get an insight from this, and I'm sure we will, from Paddy Rooney, who's a former assistant general manager at Letterkenny University Hospital. So the headline, Paddy, good morning to you firstly. Sorry, I forgot my manners.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
The headline, pretty stark. It reads pretty stark. But is there any detail behind that headline that's worth noting?
Yeah, it's a fairly stark headline, all right, to talk about 51 million euro. But I suppose, like most things, when you read down through the article, things are a bit more complicated than that. I mean, what happens every year is that each hospital, there are 27 Band 3 and Band 4 hospitals in the country. And at the beginning of the year, or around, what month is this? This August, right. So around this time of the year now, the hospitals around the country will be agreeing the budget for next year with the higher echelons of the HSE and the Department of Health. And what they do then is that the HSE, they look at the amount of money that hospitals would have got, each individual hospital, on an average basis. So there's a sort of a virtual amount calculated for the private income that the hospital may take for the following year. And that's actually deducted then from the revenue budget. So the hospital must endeavour then to earn that, if you live, you know, in inverted commas, the following year. But the problem with all this, you see, is that there is something like about 45% of the population in Donegal with health insurance. But just because somebody has health insurance, by the way, they don't have to activate it whether they want to or not. Mm. See, all this is sort of nominal stuff and virtual stuff. So when somebody comes into hospital, they have to actually sign a form to say that they want to activate their health insurance, because on the hospital computer system, the hospital information system, hospitals know what patients have health insurance and what don't. But for some particular reason, believe it or not, people are not anxious to use their health insurance because they feel it's like car insurance or whatever, that the more time they use it, that they're going to lose their no-claims bonus. And of course, that isn't the case at all. It's not calculated that way. And most people actually use their health insurance for elective admissions. The other thing as well is that in the middle of the article there, you've seen by Yael Shorigan, hospitals can only claim the fee, their money from a health insurance, if a hospital consultant signs off on the form. So there's two signatures required, one by the hospital and one by the hospital consultant. But what's happening now, though, when it's causing a drift in recent times, is that more and more hospital consultants now are signing public-only contracts, so they can't sign these forms. They can actually sign a form to get the hospital their fee, but the consultant won't actually get anything from it, because there's the consultants that are on a dual contract, they get paid as well as the hospital getting paid. So if the hospital consultant doesn't sign that form, can't sign that form, the hospital can't get their money. Secondly, for a hospital like Letterkenny that might have a lot of locum consultants, and what that means is consultants who are filling in posts post-retirement pending the appointment of a permanent consultant, or when they're in occupancy of a developmental post that hasn't been approved yet, funding hasn't been approved for that yet, they tend not to have agreement with insurance companies either, and they can't sign the forms either. Remember, this is all virtual stuff, so hospitals can't get that back, whether they like it or not. And the other problem, of course, too, it historically hasn't been a problem in Letterkenny, though, is that some hospital consultants who are entitled to get this money from the health insurance just have a huge labour. We're talking about a very small amount of consultants who don't sign the form.
So, say, for instance, I mean, I presume that the government's aim is to get all of these consultants on public contracts. What does that mean then? Say, for instance, and maybe it's hypothetical, what would that mean for the likes of Letterkenny University Hospital if all consultants were on public contracts? What would that mean for private healthcare there?
Well, it might mean everything, and it'll mean nothing, because if all the consultants are on permanent or on public only contracts, remember, there must be a mechanism where they can actually sign the form, but they won't actually benefit themselves. Mm. The problem with this, then, you see, is that the number of people who have health insurance who won't invoke their health insurance then, because they're actually in hospital using their private insurance. They might be sitting in a bed beside somebody who has a medical card. Neither of the two of us now are getting private healthcare, what we perceive that to be. And remember, that's not a huge issue in Letterkenny, because consultants, because of the volume of junior doctors they have, and they're not sidetracked in a private hospital about 40 miles or 2 miles down the road or whatever, the care that between public and private tends not to be of a huge difference anyway. But if you were in one of the major teaching hospitals in Dublin where a consultant would have a contract with a private hospital, the likes of St Vincent's, for instance, and the matter where there's public and private hospitals on the one campus and consultants have a contract on dual sites, there can be a marked difference in the perceived level of treatment. But it's not a huge issue in Letterkenny, because if consultants aren't signing the form, I mean, the HSE at national level have to pick up the tab anyway. And of course, the other point that I forgot to make as well, and it's not mentioned in the article at all, is if somebody is admitted to hospital, Greg, as a result of a road traffic collision or an accident at the work, health insurance won't touch that with a barge pole either, given whether the person has health insurance or not. Because if they have a feeling that there's litigation involved and there's money going to change hands down the line, then they put the onus on the hospital then to go and take it up with the legal firm involved to recoup the costs. So it's just not that...
So in terms of the overall money that perhaps changes hands, is there always then potentially, as the system stands now, a certain amount that's going to fall into these categories that you've been outlining to us, and it's just part of the game?
Yeah, well, there's two things involved here. I mean, the revenue bill for... the revenue budget for the 27 bans 3 and 4 hospitals in the country. Remember, it's north of 5 billion euro, yeah. And we're talking about 3.5 million euro being written off last year. I mean, that's...
It's kind of a nothing.
I know the expression you face, but it's crumbs in one case.
I get you.
And the other thing is that I see that there's two hospitals, Merlin Park and Galway, and University Hospital Galway, who stand out, and they look like that they're going to account for most of the fee involved. Mm. It's a pity they don't actually give a table here, because I suspect that Letterkenny's away down in the doldrums altogether.
Fascinating as always, Paddy. Thanks so much for your insight. I do appreciate it. Paddy Rooney there, former Assistant General Manager at Letterkenny University Hospital. I suppose the headlines aren't always what they do appear, so hopefully that's clarified. It helped us all understand it a little bit better. Right, we're going to take a break. Coming up after the news and obituary notices, we will have Community Guard information, where you'll hear the very latest appeals and information from Ungarda Síochána, first here and live on the 9 till noon show.